Here we go.
It's Thursday, 7 p.m., and time for another edition of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
Call our guest line at any time during the show and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa. The philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn.
The best way to reach us here at Ten Spoon in Montana is to go to www.tenspoon.com.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Vivac Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Call now and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, Lavinia is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry.
Come and visit Sheila Lauer of the Houston Winery.
This is Dr. Tom Cottrell. He is with the University of Kentucky Extension in Lexington, Kentucky. He's an enologist there.
I learned winemaking from the then 39 wineries in Napa Valley.
All right. We have Jason with us tonight.
Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Mike, from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Not only am I an attorney, that a good part of my practice focuses on wine regulations and litigation, but I also am the president of a vineyard up here. I started the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country.
Again, the website is greenbelt.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777.
Info at hummingbirdridgewinery.com.
My dad always said I'm a jack of all trades. He said that. You know, just a little guy.
Anyone out there who is interested in this software, you really need to go check out this site. It's www.uncork.biz.
That's really what we're about, and that's, as you said, uncork.biz is where our main site is, and that's where people can read lots about it.
Info at vineyard@hershey.com.
Well, I grew up on the farm here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
We have a website, Waltz, vineyard, with an S, like you get the S.
Paul is a blogger.
It's blog.penlive, P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
It's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
It's all about wine. Here is your host, Ron.
There he is, warming up a little bit, so the bus people get a little more excited.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The coolness.
So are we.
Yes. 64 degrees Fahrenheit right now in the area. So
and I think that might have been the high for the day. I mean,
pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
This is not Florida. Yeah.
No, this is closer to the Arctic now.
Yes.
It was brisk this morning. Frost the last 3 days, maybe, 2 or 3 days, frost. It's unusual.
Wind blowing Monday was really cold. The wind chill was minus 30, I think.
Oh, it was terrible, -30. Yeah. Snow, I don't know if you had snow in your area, but definitely accumulation here. But
yeah,
the snow that was coming
quickly,
down,
though,
it was yellow snow here. I don't know what the yellow snow was for, but it was it's pretty bad. So
and the wind stopped, and it still stayed cold, and we're still bundled up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, welcome.
Although it's funny, every time somebody walks up the walkway coming into the winery, and I go, "What state are you from?" And they go, "How do you know I'm not local?" I said, "Because you have shorts and a T-shirt on. You must be from up north somewhere." So.
I've seen those people.
It's obvious,
can't
all of us down there wearing jackets and parkas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. brisk cold. Tonight is going to be close to freezing. It'll be like in the mid-40s, which is close enough. So, it's just terrible. But we're going to talk about
Sunday. It's supposed to hit 80.
Yeah, once again, summer's back. Oh, yeah, I see that. 80, low 80s. Wow.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Interesting. And 60s for the low. So, interesting. We're going to talk about wine tonight with a few topics. No guest plan right now. However, if you would like to get on the program and talk to us, we know that there are quite a few live listeners out there now, and we appreciate that. You want to get on the program? If you want to talk about wine, are you drinking wine this evening while you're listening to the show, or just had some, or whatever, or about to? Whatever the case is, just make it about wine, the WINE version of it, not the WHINE version.
No,
of it.
No.
I want to talk about wine.
With the weather.
Yeah, I want to talk about traffic going down the interstate, how bad it is. No, that's a different kind of wine. yes. So get on the program and call us. We'll have you in the screening room first, just to see what you want to talk about, and I'll usually answer that. It's area code 646-727-3235. Call now, and we'll screen your calls, of course, and operators are standing by.
Operators
and,
are standing by. Or if you want to get a hold of us through the website, you can do that too. And that's www.allaboutwinebtr.com. And
There's a contact us place right there. So, do that. That'll be cool. So, get on the program while we're on for about the next hour, possibly a little after an hour. So, do that now. And, ladies and gentlemen, here's Ron.
Gee, thanks. We don't have a guest night, like Mike just pointed out, which, not for lack of trying. I got and sent out some letters to a bunch of a variety of different people, and haven't gotten a response. I'm not going to give up on them. I'm going to try again. But I did find a whole bunch of information here that we need to talk about. We don't need it, but we really should. Things I want to pass on to you. As always, I'm always finding things to share with you. And so that's what we're going to do tonight, do a little bit of throwing out a little bit of information for you. Again, if you want to get a hold of us or if you have any questions or anything, call us. 646-727-3235, 646-727-3235, and we'll be happy to talk to you and or email us or anything. We check those periodically, too. A few things here. First, wine trends for 2013. I saw this. I don't know if I passed this on to you or not, but if I did, then it's a repeat. If I didn't, then good. But these are just, this is out of Beverage World magazine. These are the wine trends that are being looked at for 2013. The hot segments, Moscato and Moscato d'Asti, as well as Prosecco. Now, Prosecco is the Italian sparkling wine that is usually made from Moscato grapes. They're expected to gain momentum this coming year. Throughout 2013, sparkling wines also are expected to become very hot this year. The bubbly, the champagnes, the proseccos, the cavi, all this stuff you will start seeing more and more, starting to pop up on more menus all around the country. People are starting to drink these for things other than just for a special occasion, New Year's or something like that. Sparkling wines are starting to be enjoyed with all sorts of meals and all sorts of occasions. So that's a good idea for you there, too. Don't just delegate your sparkling wines to a special occasion, they can be enjoyed with all sorts of meals. There is a wide range of them. We've talked about sparkling wines in the past and the champagnes and all that stuff, and we've told you the different styles and everything. So you can find something to suit just about everything. But that's a hot trend coming in. Blends, another thing that's happening, a top trend in 2013. California and other places are starting to use red blends and are expected to continue to do well. You're seeing a lot of that now out there, I've noticed. I'm sure you have, too. A lot of people coming into the winery are also mentioning, too, that they're really into blends now. There are some phenomenal blends. Well, your classic French blend, your Bordeaux is the classic blend. But a lot of the double O and triple grape blends that you're finding are really, really starting to catch on. A lot of the blends are staying in the sweeter, I say sweeter, not real dry, medium body style, offer a good range of flavors and all that. A lot of the blends are starting to gear toward the millennials now, too. And that's the new drinkers here, the 21s to 35s age group there. And so a lot of the blends are catching on with them, and it's becoming a very, very big category. Keg wines. We talked about keg wines a couple of weeks. Oh, I say a couple of weeks. I know it was more than that. It must have been a good month ago, a month and a half ago. We talked about keg wines and the new thing that they're doing now with keg wines and how keg wines are available. A lot of places are starting to install keg wine in different shops and stores and all that. That is becoming something that is expected to explode in 2013. I'm not going to go into the keg wine thing again. I talked about that before, but they're looking at putting a lot of keg wines in a lot of different places. That way you get an opportunity to sit down, try wines that you normally wouldn't without having to go out and buy a bottle of it. And also it gives you an opportunity to see what it's like and everything before you go out and get yourself a case of it to put it away. And also, another thing that's going to be a big trend in 2013 is the digital information. Digital wine lists are becoming more and more popular. I've talked about blogs out there. I've talked about apps. I've talked about all these different things that are becoming available. And that's going to make a big impact, the different apps available. People are going to start shopping more with their apps than with their just seeing a shelf sign that says this is good, buy it. You'll have an opportunity to really pop on different apps into your smartphones and be able to check out a lot of these. The QRC codes that are next to a lot of these signs, wineries are doing that, putting QRC codes on the bottles, and a lot of stores are putting QRCs on shelf tags and stuff. So the QR codes are a good way to check and see, and this is going to be a good trend heading into this year and probably for the future. It's going to start really picking up this year. So these are, according to the Beverage World magazine, these are some big trends coming up in wine for the year of 2013. I'm sure we've already noticed some of these that's been popping out there now, but something to look for here. Sunday, baseball starts. Major League Baseball, it's out there. They did a survey on who drinks what, baseball people, what is the drink of choice? Obviously, you go to a baseball game, and it's beer. Beer is becoming beer and baseball is the pairing, like apple pie and America and all that stuff. Beer is part of it. So, beer has always been a big part of baseball, but they're finding that imported beer is becoming very popular at baseball games. Not just the classic ones that you find at baseball parks. Imported beers like Guinness and Amstel Light have high numbers in consumer likes. Heineken Premium Light is in there also. These are just some big names. Sam Adams is picking up for baseball games. Categories on any beer, and these are indexed. And the index refers to how more or less likely the national average people are going to buy these at baseball games. So 100 being the national average. Any beer at a baseball game, 139. Domestic light, 144. Domestic regular, 150. But import beers are all the way up to 162. It's becoming a thing at baseball games now, it seems. Other spirits, though, these are people who attend baseball games, and they're finding that they ask, have you consumed other spirits in the last 30 days? And have you are you a drinker and all that? And it seems that people who attend baseball games drink. It's just another thing that we can put a correlation on there. Blended or rye whiskey, 126, based on 100 as the average American. Bourbon whiskey, 142. Brandy, 125. Canadian whiskey, 134. Cognac, 133. Gin, 149. Scotch, outrageously high at 174. Tequila, 150. And vodka, 158. These are all above the average American average for people who attend baseball games. But since this show is all about wine, we need to talk about the wine consumption. It's interesting to note that those attending Major League Baseball games did not limit themselves to just beer and spirits. They also likely to splurge on wine. Baseball attendees are 82% more likely to have bought a bottle of Pinot Noir in the last 3 months, and 74% more likely to have consumed a glass of scotch. Merlot, again, we're basing this as 100-point average on national average. Those who have bought these wines in the last month to attend baseball games, 164 for Merlot. Cabernet Sauvignon, 176. Chardonnay, 169. Pinot Grigio, 176. Pinot Noir, 182. Sauvignon Blanc, 184, and that's the leader. Syrahs, 175. And Rosés, 138. So the people who attend baseball games are drinkers. They are drinking wine, a lot of those, before, after. There are ballparks out there now that are serving wine, too. I noticed something a couple years ago that a lot of ballparks are starting to offer wine as a beverage. I actually did get to attend a preseason game this year, and all the years I've been here and all the times I've talked about it, I actually went to one here a couple of weeks ago, and I was, if I thought I could make my way over to him to talk to him, I was like to talk to Joe Madden, who is the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, who is a big wine fan. He has a lot of wines. He drinks wine after games. He's been interviewed, and he's talked about the wine he likes. He has himself a nice wine cellar and all that. But I didn't think I would be able to make my way over to him without somebody tackling me, thinking I was going to hurt him or something. So it didn't happen. But baseball people are wine drinkers, and not only just beer and spirits, but wine. It seems like wine is a big part of their consumption there. So that's cool. That's cool to hear about that. Baseball, though, starts Sunday, the Major League season. If anybody out there has got a fantasy team, a weekly fantasy team, and you need another player, email me. I'll be happy to join your weekly fantasy. I can't do it every day. I can't keep up with that, but on the weeklies I can. So email me. I'll be happy to jump in and join your weekly fantasy team. Fun stuff, I think. New product out. And this is something that I don't know. I sort of scratched my head about it. This is from Dogfish Head Craft Brewery in Milton, Delaware. Their internet address is dogfish.com. And it says here, Dogfish Head has combined its 60-minute IPA with Syrah grape must, I'm sorry, from California, to create Dogfish Head 61. Launching this month, the beer-wine hybrid features 6.5% alcohol by volume. A four-pack of 12-ounce bottles will be available four times a year, and will have a suggested retail price between $8.99 and $9.99. So wine and beer combo in the bottle is going to be Dogfish 60-Minute IPA, which I'm not familiar with that beer and that designation. If somebody is out there listening to us, let us know what that means. And let us know what the 60-Minute beer is like. Is it a dark, light, heavy? Interesting. 60-Minute IPA beer combined with Syrah grape must to create what they're calling a Dogfish Head 61. Wow. I think I'm going to try to find the stack wine before I try that. So, we got something else that I want to pass on to you here. And this is out of, Beverage World again. This is the wine consumption by regions of the world, also global wine companies and how much they sell, and then the 10 fastest growing markets from 2003 through 2009. Wine consumption by regions. This is volume in millions of liters. So this is, I won't say each time millions. I'll just 1,436 millions of liters. Asia is setting at Australia only 547. Central and South America 2,105. Eastern Europe, and we're talking Russia actually 2,681 million liters. Middle East, that's North Africa, only 112. There's the smallest ones. North America, 3,050 million liters consumption. This was in the year 2009. Rest of Africa, this is not just the northern, the Middle East area, 409. And then Western Europe, as might be expected, the biggest wine consumers, 13,462 million liters of wine was consumed in 2009. The global wine market grew by 1.3% in the last year of the record to $259.8 billion value. The global wine remained at the volume of 21.4 billion liters. Europe obviously leads. Supermarkets and hypermarkets form the most important distribution channel in the global wine market, accounting for almost 36% of total volume. The top 10 global wine companies, Constellation brand, these are thousands of 9-liter cases, and this is how we have always judged everything, 9-liter cases whenever you see any numbers or anything, they always use a 9-liter case, which is a case of 12. You know, 750 milliliters. You have if this will stay up, 12 times 750 divided by 1,000. 9 liters. 9-liter cases. Constellation brand leads with 83,000 in thousands, so 83,000. E.J. Gallo is next with 57. The Wine Group, 56. Castel Group, 48. Foster's Group, 38. La Grande, 34. Pinaflor, 31. Conchitura, 26. Pernod Ricard, 26. And McGugin Simeon, 23. A lot of these are heads of lots of labels that you have heard of, that you have seen, that you have drank. You just don't know that that is the major company. A lot of these are under. I think I read something about that in one of the shows. I was reading a little chart of some of them that are just you know, the clusters of wines under it. So if you look back on that, I think it'll give you a web address so you can go and check that out. 10 fastest growing markets from 2003 to 2008. Number one, China. These are millions of liters again, 482.9 million liters. U.S. came in second with 372.2 million liters. Then the United Kingdom, 161.5. And then Italy, 111.9. Russia, 70.7. Australia, 68.8. Then Romania, 66.3. Poland, 64.2. Canada, 59.6. And Kazakhstan, 56.0. These are the fastest growing markets in that period there, which leads me to the next thing I want to talk about here is an article I found in BBC News, BBC News Magazine. The headline is, "Why are the French drinking less wine?" If you noticed, out of those top 10, France wasn't there. Why are the French drinking less wine? Is what this article said, or asked. And I will basically tell you what it says. The question worries a lot of people. Ornithophiles, cultural commentators, flag wavers for France, all of whom have watched with consternation the gradual disappearance of wine from the national dinner table. Recent figures have confirmed that France is actually in a wine drinking free fall. In 1980, more than half the adults consuming wine on a near daily basis. Today, that figure has fallen to 17%. That's just amazing when you think about it. I mean, you know, the French paradox. And I don't know if everyone out there is familiar with that term, but let me explain it quickly and simply here, which really makes you even more concerned about the French falling off in the consumption of alcoholic beverages. But the French paradox, the French incident of vascular disease, of heart attacks, strokes, you know, things like that. I mean, anything to do with the blood and strokes and heart attacks and all that. The French incident of all that stuff is a fraction of what we have here in the United States. Just a very, very small amount compared to us. And their diets, if you look at it, are very rich. I mean, the pastas themselves, the sauces, the white sauces that they put on stuff, breads, big consumers of breads, big consumers of pastries. The French pastries are known, you know, worldwide. I mean, you know, we would all love to have French pastry after every meal. All these high things that would create problems with the blood systems and stuff like that, and they are still one of the lowest incidents of vascular disease and heart attacks and strokes. They attribute that to the fact that the French drink red wines almost their entire lives. Now, don't get me wrong, they don't start giving a six-year-old kid a glass of wine. What they do is they'll take a glass of wine, say a 10-ounce glass, they'll put an ounce of wine in it and 8 ounces of water. And then when he's 6 years old, when he's seven, maybe an ounce and a half, eight, 2 ounces. Time to 13, 14 years old, they're actually drinking a glass of wine. But it's something that they've been acclimated to, they have grown with throughout their lives, and so therefore it's something that is just a natural part of their diet. And the incidence of all these heart disease and vascular disease being so low is be attributed to the fact that they're doing that, that they drink these wines their whole lives. This is called, and I've actually given a name to it, this is called the French paradox. And the French paradox is actually well known and all that. But they're not drinking wine that much anymore. The portion of French people who have never drank wine at all has doubled to 38%, which is a lot. In 1965, the amount of wine consumed per head of population was 160 liters a year. That was in 65. In 2010, that had fallen to 57 liters and is likely to dip no more than 30 liters in the years ahead. I mean, from 160 in 1965 to 57 liters per person now. It's just phenomenal. At dinner, a wine is the third most popular drink after tap and bottled water. Sodas and fruit juice are catching up, and it may are just a short ways behind it. They may be taking over before very long, the wine consumption. According to a recent study in the International Journal of Entrepreneurship, changes in French drinking habits are clearly visible through the attitude of the each generation. People in their 60s and 70s grew up on wine. For them, wine is a essential part of their meal, essential part of the lifestyle and the cultural heritage. The middle generation, the ones in the 40s and 50s, see wine as more of an occasional indulgence. They compensate that they compensate their declining consumption by spending more money, but they are drinking less. They aren't going out and ordering wine all the time. They are ordering other stuff. Members of the third generation, the internet generation, the millennials, if you will, do not even start taking interest in wine until their mid to late 20s. Now, maybe because the middle generation is not starting them at that younger age, like I just explained to you, then they're not picking up until later in life, whereas the older generation, that's how they did it. That's what they did. So it's interesting to see how the health factor is going to be playing into this. See if the French paradox is going to continue being the French paradox. Who knows? It might even change. The mid to late 20s, for them, wine is a product like any other, and they need persuading that it's worth their money. What has happened is a progressive erosion of wine's identity. They're saying it's not sacred. It's not the part of the French identity anymore. It's becoming something that you have to look at differently. Over the three generations, this has led to the change in the French habits of consumption and the steep declines in the volume of wines that are drank. Obviously, this is in 1980, every day or nearly every day consumption of wine was 51%. Occasionally, once or twice a week, 30%. That was in the 80s. 2010, 20 years later, every day or nearly every day dropped down to 17%. Occasionally, or once or twice a week, 45%. And so you just add those two together, and you still have a much larger gap at the top of that that is not drinking wine at all. Previously, 81%. Now you're looking at, 64%, 65%. I mean, it's the overall consumption has dropped. It's what they're wearing. They fear that the time-honored French values, the traditions and appreciation of good things in life are on the way out, taking more of a hygienial, moralistic, it says here, new order attitude, more cynicism toward wines, more thinking it's an older tradition that doesn't need to be carried on to newer generation. Wine is not some trophy product that they roll out to celebrate the grand occasions as they used to or show off their social status. It's now a table drink intended to accompany a meal and complement what's on the plate, and that's it. It's not something that is you don't pull out your Lafite Rothschild and say, here, I've got us a great Lafite Rothschild for this meal. You just pull out a wine and say, here, I've got wine for the meal. Wine is an element in the meal, and it's gone from being popular to more elitist, actually, the higher ones. It should be drinkable, but it's not, they're saying on this. For many years, people have been steadily abandoning what the French society refers to as the repas, or meal, by which a convivial gathering around the table and not individualized. And the traditional family meal is withering away, and because of that, so is drinking of the wine with the meal as part of the thing. It's more an individual thing now. People are just a couple of people sitting down having a quick meal at home and all that. It's not the traditional family meal as it has been for, you know, eons, for generations in France. The new world order, if you will, the electronics and the go, has caused that to deteriorate, which has also affected the consumption of wine with the meal. Wine drinking in France is certainly part of a long-standing way of life, but they are not drinking as much as they did 50 years ago. In the Middle Ages, for example, wine was commonly drunk in wine-growing areas, but it was a weak concoction popular mainly because it was safe. The Revolution of 1789 dispelled the aristocratic image that wine had had acquired by then. And the economic change of the 19th century helped permeate it throughout society. And the rise of wine mirrored the rise of the working class. And it was the war of 1914 to 1918, or actually World War I, that really secured its position in the hearts of the French. The soldiers went over the top, pickled on canard, they're saying. The strong, low-quality wine, which was supplied in bulk up until then, the Normans, the Bretons, the people of Picardy and the North, they had never touched wine, but they learned in the trenches to drink wine. A lot of the French soldiers would drink wine to fortify them, fortify their courage, if you will. After that, in France, they generalized the consumption of cheap wine so that by the 1950s, they were drinking outlets, cafes, bars, everywhere. Wine just continued on from World War I, and it just exploded throughout the times. Tiny villages would have five or six little wine outlets, drinking outlets. But that was the high point in the 1950s. The decline in consumption started back in the 60s. That's when it started to fall. And everyone agrees on the main factors. Fewer people work outdoors, so the fortifying qualities of wine are less in demand. Offices require people to stay awake, so lunchtimes are, by and large, dry, which, yeah. The old tradition of drinking a lot of wine during lunch and stuff like that, which was very popular in the early 50s and 60s, stopped. Then there was the rise of the car, wine's worst enemy, being referred to by one of the authors of this. Changing demographics with French's large Muslim minority and the growing popularity of beer and mixers. So you had a combination of the car, you had a combination of the French Muslim minority growing larger, which didn't drink a lot, and then beer and mixers became a very popular alternative to just drinking wine. But other things, technocentric elite with their campaigns against drinking and alcoholism, they're saying, lumping wine in with every other type of alcohol even made it that much harder for wine to make any type of headway. The alcohol campaign of the French drinking too much and everything targeted wine along with it. Recently, the author says here, he heard one senior health official saying that wine causes cancer from the very first glass. That shows you a little bit of why there is a problem there. That coming from a Frenchman. He says he was flabbergasted. And hawk with the health lobby and the politically correct, our elites prefer to keep the country on chemical antidepressants and wean us off of wine. This guy was quite upset. Just look at the figures, he said. In the 1960s, we were drinking 160 liters each year and weren't taking any pills. Today, we consume 80 million packets of antidepressants and wine sales are collapsing. Wine is the subtlest, most civilized, most noble of antidepressants. But look at our villages. The village bar has gone, replaced by the pharmacy. It continues, the veteran observer of his nation's way of life, he's an Oxford-based French writer, Theodore Zeldin. agrees that the business style culture has made huge inroads into France, the bane of those who prefer to take their time and drink wine. Championship has been replaced by networking. Business means busyness, and that has affected everyone. Instead of taking time and just sitting back and enjoying wine, the French are becoming busy, and they are not enjoying the wines like they did in their traditional heritage. In their traditional times, it's become a more hurried society. The old French art de vivre is still there. It's an ideal. It's a bit like the ideal of an English gentleman. You don't often find an English gentleman, but the ideal is there, and it informs society as a whole. This is times have changed, and the French are sadly changing with it. And one of the things they're doing is they are abandoning the enjoyment of wine and the consumption of wine because they're not taking their time to find it. It says the art of wine is about taking your time, and wine is a part of it, because with wine you have to take your time. After all, he says, that is one of the great things about wine. You don't swig it. So, you know, this is why on that list I just read you, the French aren't there. They are actually giving up. That's why when I say, I tell people that we are the United States is taken over and passed France as consumers, and people go, no. Well, actually, it's when you start looking at it like this article just said, it is not unusual. It's almost surprising that not more countries or peoples have not taken them over. So that's one of the things I want to pass on to you. That's why the French. Something else I want to talk to you about a little bit here is I've got a lot of things. I just noticed the time. I'm always concerned about my time, and then I end up talking a lot more than.
That's all right.
Yeah. These are things I think are interesting. I hope the listeners think they're interesting, right? These are things I think are interesting. We talked a couple of weeks ago about Passover wine and about kosher wines and stuff like that. And we had Rabbi Jeff on the program, and he told us a little bit about it. And Rabbi Jeff invited my wife and I to a Passover Seder, is what it's called, which is a not really a dinner. It's way he described it. It is an order of things, how things are done. He invited us to a Passover Seder so we can see what it was all about. I'm not Jewish, but we went, and it was extremely interesting, very, very interesting. Learn about how it's done and stuff like that. Just had a pleasant couple of hours learning about stuff and listening to all the stuff and everything and all. But Passover is going on right now. It started Monday at sundown, and it will end on April the 2nd, which is this coming Tuesday. And one of the things that the Seder does is you drink 4 cups of wine. This is all part of the ceremony, drinking 4 cups of wine. Kosher wine, obviously. Kosher wine, as we discovered talking to him, is wine that has not been contaminated by outside ingredients, and the grapes are crushed and everything observed properly and all that, and you don't have any of the influence of other stuff on it. Rabbi Jeff talked to us about that a couple of weeks ago. And so let me pop this down. You didn't, huh? I just heard a noise on this and I thought you were telling me something.
Nope.
The rules for kosher wine, obviously, we find out, are extensive. There's all sorts of rules and regulations. Only practicing male Jews can handle the winemaking equipment, the kosher wines. The rules were set up by the rabbinic rules, not by the Bible, not by biblical rules, but by rabbinic rules. You can still get what they call mivushal wines. Mivushal wines are wines that have been boiled. A wine that has been heated and boiled, which
takes out the impurities. It is less susceptible to prohibited rituals and stuff like that. But you know as well as I do that when you boil a wine, it destroys it pretty much. I mean, it takes out the flavors and everything else. So they have a new method now. What they're doing for mefishel wines is they're not boiling. Instead, it goes through a flash pasteurization, or what is referred to as an HTST, a high temperature short time pasteurization, which retains the flavors, and then they immediately bring it back down. They heat it up quickly to 180, and then within 60 seconds, they chill it back down again, so it preserves the flavors and taste. There are many wines with a kosher mark on it that are not mefushel. M-E-V-U-S-H-A-L, mefushel, I think that's pronounced. Since red wines are sensitive to the heating, then you got to watch this flash pasteurization. Wines can be certified kosher and certified kosher for Passover and not be mefushel. But you can have both. So there are wines that are fermented for Passover. I use natural yeast, and it's, you know, same thing with leavened bread. Leavened bread means that there's no yeast in it to rise it, and that's, you know, Passover wines has to use natural yeast and stuff like that. So if you are out there, you're looking for some kosher wine, let me give you a few wineries here that do make kosher wines and also mefushel wines. One of them is Covenant Wines. Covenant Wines is located in St. Helena, California. They make five kosher wines, three Napa Cabernets, a Sonoma Cabernet, and a Dry Creek Valley Sauvignon Blanc. You can contact them at www.covenantwines.com, C-O-V-E-N-A-N-T, covenantwines.com. Covenant? I don't know. Another one. Don Ernesto makes wines. There are five wines, including two red table wines, the Crescendo and Clarinet. The white wines are Rosé de Syrah and College White. All are Passover and mefushel wines. DonErnesto.com. Also, Hegefen Cellars. Does it. That's www.hegefen, H-A-G-A-F-E-N, hegefen.com. They're located in Napa. They do about 8,000 cases a year, but they produce wines according to Jewish dietary laws. These are the Cabernet, Pinot Noir, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Syrah, Chardonnay, a bunch of different Rieslings, Sauvignon Blanc, and a Brut Cuvée. So there's another one in Napa. And then we've got Herzog Wine Cellars located in Oxnard, California. They've been making kosher wines for years. Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah, Zinfandel, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Grigio, Champagnes, all certified kosher. Herzog Cellars, H-E-R-Z-O-G. Wine Stock Cellars is another one that does a variety of kosher wines. We just talked last week about Israeli wines and how they're trying to get into the market here. If you can't find them, that's why we're our 2 weeks. Was it? No, it was 2 weeks ago. Here's the ones you can get here in local. Weinstock Wine Cellars offers wines that are mefushel and kosher for Passover, located in California also. They do a Cab, a Merlot, Zinfandel, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, White Zin, and Moscato. So there's a good variety of different ones for you if you are still looking for wines for Passover, or if you're not and you want to try some kosher wines or mefushel wines, there's a good opportunity to check those wineries out and do that. Something else I want to hit on quickly here is some of the celebrity wineries that are out there. We're getting a lot of celebrity wineries that are popping up. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because just this month, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are partnering up with a French winemaking family called Perrin, P-E-R-R-I-N. They're going to release a rosé wine with their partnership, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. So I just want to talk a little bit about some of the celebrity wines out there. For years, it's been happening. I mean, doctors love to have wineries. Military officers, back in the Roman times, politicians and military officers all loved to have their own vineyard. It was very popular. Celebrity wines actually do draw a larger crowd. According to a 2007 study by Nielsen Research Group, grocery store sales of celebrity wines rose almost 19% in 1 year. That represents $42 million, almost 1% of total wine sales. I mean, so if you're a celebrity and you put your name on it, it starts to carry some weight. Some of the celebrities out there who have wines, football legend Mike Ditka lent his name to a wine and Mendocino wine company. Last year, though, Mike Ditka announced he was making wines with a new company, Toretto Wines International, T-E-R-I-A-T-O, Toretto Wines International. You can find that. I'm not going to give you the full address, but ToretoWines.com, brands, California, Mike Ditka Wines, all that stuff's on there. Out of Santa Rosa, another one, he's coming out with three different ones. It is unspecified how many he's going to actually lend his name to, but Mike Ditka is one of them there. It's one he's going to call the Player, which is going to be a blend of Merlot and Pinot Grigio, the Coach, Cabernet and Sauvignon Blanc, and different ones like that. Comedian Dan Aykroyd has also developed a taste for wines. He did that while working on the Blues Brothers movies. So in 2007, he partnered with Diamond Estates Wine and Spirits, and which is a Canadian alcohol distributor, and launching Dan Aykroyd's wine, diamondestates.ca. You can find it from there and follow the links, find out more about it. Diamond Estates offers a variety of them. They're available only in Canada, though, so if you want one, you're going to have to ask somebody from Canada to send it to if you live in the States, or if you are in Canada, you can check it out and write me. Let me know how they are, what they're like. Drop us a little note on the email, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All these different ones, I get confused. There are some wine collaborations going on out there, too. Jeff Gordon of NASCAR fame is partnering with the winemaker Joe Briggs of August Briggs Winery, and that's www.augustbriggswinery.com, AugustBriggsWinery.com, August Briggs. They're located in Calistoga. Jeff Gordon is partnering with him, and they're coming out with some wines, a variety of different wines, range from $45 to $65 a bottle, and a Magnum for $115. So gives you a bigger bottle to break over the hood of the car when you win the race. So they're going to be in wine shops in California, Virginia, Texas, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. Another sports legend that is getting into wines that is has his own, he actually had a wine and vineyard in Canada, and he closed it in 2011, is Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky Estates now offers three lines. He's not working with Peller Estates anymore. He has three lines of wine on his own, a Meritage, a Merlot, and a Chardonnay, which has won double gold in 2012 and in Canada competition. Also, recently, a Cab Merlot blend. Reasonably priced, $14 to $16 a bottle. He's also got a estate series of Gewürztraminer, Terminer, Pinot Noir, and a Syrah Cabernet. And those are a little bit more expensive, but again, There also has a Canadian style. Oh, here's cool too. A Syrah's ice wine for $55 for 375 milliliters. So, Wine Gretzky is doing it. And then we've got some classics here. Raymond Burr bought a ranch in Dry Creek Valley in California in 1986. When he died in 1993, his partner, Robert Benavides, renamed the estate Raymond Burr Vineyards. And it's still in operation. They're still going. We got another winery, the McMurray Ranch. McMurray Ranch, M-A-C-M-U-R-R-A-Y Ranch, McMurray Ranch. Fred McMurray from My Three Sons fame, if you remember that show. They've got quite a bit of acreage and got a lot of 450 acres of Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris grapes. And their first vintage was released in 2000. And Fred McMurray's daughter is the spokesman for the wine label, and they're still making it. And we've all also seen the Fess Parker wines. They're out there. We see those quite a bit, and they're really pretty pretty decent wines. I've had some Fess Parker wines. Fess Parker died in 2010. His son Eli and daughter Ashley are still involved in the day-to-day operations of it. It includes over 1,500 acres of vineyards. The tasting room, visitor center. It was featured in the 2004 movie Sideways, if you remember. But the Fess Parker Winery is another one that they're doing a Pinot Noir, Syrah, Chardonnay, Viognier, Riesling, and non-traditional ports, $13 to $55 a bottle. And the list goes on and on. You have wine bottles featuring all sorts of celebrities and stuff, which helps sell bottles. You've got musicians that are getting involved in the wine business. Sting, Madonna, Fergie, Little John, Dave Matthews, Bo Skaggs, even AC/DC has got some connection with wine, as does Drew Barrymore, Sam Neill, Emilio Estevez, Antonio Banderas. All our owners are part owners of commercial wineries. So a lot of people out there that have names behind them, sports and actors and politicians, all that. And, probably the reason is because they've got the money. And, the old saying in the business is, how to make a small fortune in the winery business? You start with a large fortune. So that's probably why they're all getting involved with it. So that's another reason why they probably have it. I was going to talk about some other stuff tonight, and like I said, I didn't think I was going to have time. I do want to hit on a couple of things real quickly here. Pennsylvania, we've talked to a lot of Pennsylvania wineries, and everybody says the same thing. The state stores have always been a pain, and they wish there was other ways and all that stuff. And this came out in the Lancaster News on March 21st, 2013. This was put online, so this was, last Thursday, actually. But it didn't come out until after I had the program. It states, in a historic vote, legislation to end the state's 80-year monopoly on liquor sales is one step closer to becoming law. How many times have we talked to people in Pennsylvania and we have heard them complain about the state stores and how that kills them and how it's not helping the small wineries and stuff like that and how the system is set up? And we even had one of our guests explained to us how the system is set up, where you submit your wine and then a panel tastes it and they go, yeah, this is okay, we'll put it in the store, or, oh, yeah, forget it. really?
Yep.
That's, what they were saying. So, but it says House members on Thursday, which was last Thursday, passed a plan backed by Governor Tom Corbett that would dramatically change the way booze is sold in Pennsylvania. The passage of House Bill 790 on a 105-90 vote, which is very close, after 7 hours of debate, marks the first time legislation on liquor privatization has made it to the floor in either legislative chamber. So that's just in itself is a big step. Let me continue to read this to you because I don't want to paraphrase. I want to let you know. Lancaster County lawmakers voted along party lines with seven local Republicans supporting the bill and a lone Democrat opposing it. The primary reason Republican legislatures gave the voting for privatization was a belief that private businesses can do the job better. In a free market economy, is the role of the private industry to market and sell goods. Unfortunately, for 80 years, Pennsylvania state government has trumped the function of the private sector when it comes to sale of wine and spirits. And I said, most people feel the same way in the state. In the last 3 days, they've been inundated with emails. About 70% of the state emailing the legislatures telling them to support the bill, which, you know, is probably wineries just kept sending stuff and changed the name. Representative Ryan Almott from West Hampton Township said he has been hearing the same thing from his voters and believes it's the dawn of a new age. There was a time when members of the General Assembly from Lancaster County representing the will of the constituents would have viewed any rollback of provisions stemming from prohibition with great skepticism. But times are changing and in Lancaster County and across the country. He said he believes the state should focus solely on enforcing laws about alcohol use and not worry about selling them in there. There is an old saying that you can't serve two masters, and that's what the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board has been trying to do by marketing alcohol while enforcing liquor laws, which is true. They, you know, they're trying to sell alcohol, but then they're trying to do it. There's enforcing liquor laws, providing the only opposition was Representative Mike Sterla, a Democrat from Lancaster City. He said, this is basically a sellout to the corporate interest at the expense of family-owned beer distributors. The 5,000 state store employees and the citizens of Pennsylvania who will pay more and have a smaller selection to choose from. That's his complaint. It says the bill moved quickly through the chamber this week, and after the House Liquor Control Board Committee on Monday endorsed a radically altered version of the original bill proposed by House minority leaders, the amended version gives beer distributors the first shot at purchasing 1,200 liquor and wine licenses. After 1 year, remaining licenses will be made available to the public. The 600 state stores would be gradually reduced as the number of licensees in each county grows. Once the number of state stores falls below 100, they all would be closed. The amendment would also create a wine and beer license for grocery stores and convenience stores that have restaurant licenses. In addition, the amendment bill does not earmark $1 billion from the sales of license specifically toward education block grants. So, and let's see. This is, is it, what the bill would do. It would wholesale privatization. Beer distributors can buy license after a year. Anyone could. A wine and spirits licensee can hold five licenses in the state, but no more than one per county. Licensees can't require memberships, meaning that Costco and Sam's Clubs would be excluded. How much will license cost? They're saying it will cost distributors in Lancaster County $37,500 to sell wine and $60,000 to sell spirits. They can pay over 5 years with a 5% interest fee. New wine and spirit stores will in the county will pay $187,500 to sell wine and $262,500 to sell spirits. And the renewal every 2 years will be $1,000. Grocery stores may purchase a license to sell any quantity of wine. Lancaster stores will have to pay $187,500, with Sunday sales would be permitted. Restaurants may purchase a license to sell up to six wine bottles to go, in addition to beer, which is currently allowed to sell. A gas station that has a restaurant license will be allowed to sell limited amounts of beer and wine. And state stores will continue to operate until they get down to the last 100. And the employees will receive education grants and civil service hiring preferences and the businesses who hire them would get tax credits. So that's what's proposed. So it looks like, you know, things might be changing. I don't know. It's almost scary that they are jumping in and doing that. And we really need to get hold of our lawyer friend up there in Pennsylvania, Jason, and ask him. I'll see if I can't get a hold of him this week, and maybe he can come on next week and give us a little insight to that and what it all means and everything. Because it looks like it might be something that could improve the whole thing, but with those licensing fees that I just read there.
Yeah, I was going to say that's outrageous.
Yeah, that's staggering, especially for small places, small businesses and stuff. That's staggering. I guess you can put it up against the fact that you're going to be selling this stuff, but still though, that's, I don't know. So, but maybe I can get a hold of Jason. He can come on and talk to us about it next week. So there, I've got other things to talk about. I'm not going to go on tonight. These are things I was going to talk about, and I need to talk about this in the future because this is interesting. Wine certifications. You see these initials of people who are wine people. A certification, CSW and a WSET and certified sommelier and all these different things, and you know, an MW and a AS and an MS and all that stuff. I'm going to talk about that in the future. Not today, but it will be something that we're going to cover and talk about sometime in the future. So we're going to stop tonight. Everyone have a great Easter and Passover or whatever holidays you happen to celebrate on this, or if you don't celebrate any of them, then just enjoy yourself a good hunk of ham or lamb over the next couple of days, and pair it with a great wine.
That's right. And where can you get that great wine?
Florida Estates Winery.
That's right. That's right. And what a great time to come down and visit the winery. Then Saturday, is that the 30th? Yeah, see, I still have to look at the calendar. Even though I know they're on Saturdays, and you put Saturday, there it is, Saturday the 30th. Okay, stupid. Okay, it's been a long day. There it is, Wine Fest coming up this Saturday. That is 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. That's right, Florida State's Winery will be open Saturday for your enjoyment and for your shopping needs for the next day, which is Sunday, obviously, and the big day. So we'll be right back after I can't remember which one to play here. I'll just play this one. Try this.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Oh, yeah. And there you go. That is this Saturday, March the 30th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m., Sam Osborne providing live entertainment out underneath the oak trees. It is going to be a beautiful day, sunny Saturday. with a high of in the low 80s and a low in the morning in the mid 50s. So definitely fantastic weather. Great time to come out. It's cool, and of course I've been out there during the summertime. And once you get underneath those the shade, it's those trees. The whole place out in the back is just shade. I mean, it's incredible. So it's not a bad spot there. But you know, if you like the cooler type of weather, you want to sit outside and just enjoy yourself. That's a great time and a great place to do it, and enjoy some great wine too. So definitely come out there and do that. There's going to be a lot of, oh my God, this list is huge. A
lot of vendors, yeah.
A lot of 15. Vendors coming out.
Yeah.
God, so come on out and enjoy it. It's going to be a great weekend at Florida State's Winery. And quite a few things here. Let's see. This I don't remember seeing this before. Lisa with Pet Meals on Wheels is going to be there. Let's see, the Pasco County's Meals on Wheels division, and that's going to be cool. So it looks like she's going to be there promoting that. There's going to be quite a few other vendors. This list, like you said, is 15 out there. Everything you can think of is going to be out there. So.
Yeah, we've got a good crowd this week, and good group of vendors. Yeah.
Yep, and we know there's a lot of
people
out there.
You can have a glass of wine while you're shopping the vendors, which is always
right.
fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like last time I had a glass of wine and I was sitting there listening to, I forgot who was there, if it was Angela or if it was, no, I don't think it was Angela. It might have been Sam the day I was there. But, yeah, definitely cool a time to come out. So definitely want to be out there Saturday. And the tip jar this month is for Grandma's Girls Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. So as you walk through the winery, you're right there next to the cash register. Put something in the tip jar this month and help out a great cause. Okay, so definitely do that.
Yeah,
and be fantastic. And let's see. Also, you have events coming up actually for them as well. Grandma's Girls Making Strides Against Breast Cancer on September 7th and October 5th, Pasco Pet Fest Fundraisers. Will be held at the winery. So
start
supporting. Yep, save those dates. September 7th for Grandma's Girls Making Strides Against Breast Cancer, and October 5th Pasco Pet Fest fundraisers will be held at the winery. So we'll give you more information as those dates come up. But mark your calendars now, and it's going to be great. So and support the causes. Very good. Let's see what else. I guess so. Next
one
week
more
we're
thing.
Kind of. Yep, go ahead.
Bud break. Bud break's happening all over the place. For those of you trying to keep up with it and you're marking your calendars, lots of plants all over the place. California starting to get bud break. We're getting it here in Florida. Warmer climates. It's as long as the snow starts disappearing and it gets warm, we should start getting bud break on plants all over the country within the next 2 or 3 weeks. So I want to mention that too. Bud break is coming out.
Now, that's a busy time for wineries, or is it kind of like,
Not really. We pretty much got everything trimmed up on the plants, and now you're sitting there watching all the little buds come out and all the little green starting to pop out on all the plants, and it's starting to get a little bit prettier out there because you're seeing the greens. Instead of just the sticks of the plants, you're starting to get a little bit of greens, and the buds are starting to pop out and all that. So now's a little bit of setback for week or two here, and just enjoy it. So
good.
Not real busy yet.
Okay. Cool. I guess we will go ahead and end the show for tonight, and we'll say we'll see you everybody on April the 4th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in the U.S. And you'll have
hopefully
to stay
Tennessee.
Tuned to. Hopefully, Tennessee. I was going to say you may want to stay with the website or which has a link to the feed from Facebook, or check us out on Facebook and see what's coming up on the show. Otherwise, we just do another generic type of thing and cover some of the topics you kind of hinted on tonight. Yeah. So
yeah. But there's cool. In fact, there's some I might. Might do that because the geographical indications thing that we were talking about before and all that, I wanted to get a little update on some of that. And also the TTB, That's the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. That is the ruling party for the wine industry.
I was going to say the wallet, but okay.
Yeah. And it's got some. Yeah, it's got a site with a lot of interesting information on it. I was going to go through different things like that. I mean, it talks about American viticulture areas and how you apply to become an American viticulturist. We've talked about AVAs before, but what does it take? Mm-hmm. Also, what are the rules and regulations for home winemakers? Things I wanted to cover a little bit there. And, a bonded winery. I mean, every winery in the United States is classified as a bonded winery. What does that mean, and what do you do on that? And just different things that people might be interested in, just some information.
So that home winemaking is of interest, and you're talking about rules. I guess we can get into it next time, but I'm just curious. Are there rules for you to consume it yourself, or are homemakers actually selling it for? I can understand you'd have to have rules there, but just for yourself, I mean, that I don't think there'd be anything that you'd have to be concerned with that just for your own consumption.
Number three here says the operations must never cross the line. That's in quotes to commercial production or sale of wine.
Okay.
Operators and employees of winemakers centers, may furnish space, equipment, ingredients, bottling supplies, and advice to customers.
Mm-hmm.
B, may provide certain assistance to customers, including moving containers of wine between storage areas, cleaning, maintenance, and repair, climate temperature control, disposal of waste, quality control, but they may not ferment the juice, filter or bottle wine. They can't add any ingredients. They can't physically assist in the producing and bottling of the wine. These are, if you're going to do this, you've got people coming in. One adult residing in a household can do up to 200 gallons. If one adult can do 100 gallons per year, per calendar year, two adults can do 200 gallons per calendar year. But that's it in a household. But then it goes on to other stuff and all that. But, yeah, it's just
interesting.
It is. It's interesting. A lot of this stuff is interesting. What it takes to become an AVA, American Viticulture, and what involves with that. I mean, we've all heard of the AVAs and stuff, but what does it actually take to be an AVA? And what is the procedures and all that?
Very cool.
Yeah, you know, it's just a lot of stuff here that you don't really think about. But if somebody says something about it, you go, "Oh, really?"
Okay. We'll look forward to that definitely.
We'll see. Maybe we might do that next week. It talks about all sorts of stuff. Here's another good section too. Rules. For transferring unlabeled bottled wine, responsibilities of a producer, responsibilities of a bottler, what does the labeler receive from the bottler? I mean, these are all things that are covered by the TTB. It's just a lot of interesting stuff here, and the things that you don't think about. Here's a line here. Name approved under 27 CFR 4.92 for use on wines bottled prior to January 1st, 2006. Johannesburg Riesling. If they were bottled before then, you can use that. But then again, we run across the name designations and stuff. It talks about custom crush. It talks about, may I sell home-produced wines? Only wine produced at a fully qualified bonded wine premises may be sold or offered for sale. So if your neighbor is making wine and selling it to y'all, then that's illegal.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Well, we'll talk about that more next week then.
Yeah.
Join us April 4th at 7 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll have an interesting topic, either talking to our next date.
Why don't we just go ahead and TTB? Why don't we just plan on doing this the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, U.S. Department of Treasury. This is rules, regulations, information concerning the wine industry. So we'll why don't we just go ahead and do that next week?
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are some interesting things. There's a lot of interesting information on this site here. And you know,
if you're a different representative of the TTB, contact us, and maybe you can speak about it as well.
If I can get a hold of the TTB and somebody will be willing to do that, that would be great. I'll call the TTB tomorrow and see.
Okay.
I don't know if they have someone. They're usually pretty nice because the government tries to be nice to people. So
hold on, I got to mute the microphone.
We all know that.
Okay, I'm back.
I had to
hold back my laughter.
Because they take our money, so they got to be nice to us. So.
Yeah, okay. That was good.
So,
yeah, we'll see
about
that.
We'll talk next week.
Yep, next week, Thursday. Be here on Blog Talk Radio. It's all about wine, and we'll go ahead and close the show. Thanks to everybody for listening and for joining us either in archives or live. We really appreciate it, and we'll see
you
all
next
week. Yep, have a great week and a great weekend. And if you celebrate it, happy Easter, and come out to the winery Saturday. Don't forget, 11 to 4 p.m. for Wine Fest. And we'll see you all. Thanks.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.